The views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
Revolution comes with a price tag. You a slave to a flag in a country that clearly doesn't love you when they probably never have told you turn the other cheek. And they made it with a bat, fuck them protests in them cities. Told you go fight in the war, Vietnam, you die good riddance. That man of the house rule took you from your siblings. Turned around a pump crack right up in your city. And they turned all your leaders to martyrs. You was off in the war, now who was guarding your daughters? It was riots in the streets, killed Malcolm and Martin. Called a national guard up because we ride with our guard up. And that was blood in your guard. The Second Amendment don't apply to you. Everything that they taught you was a lie to you. See, they scared of your skin and they dying to shoot. Take the American dream and then you die to pursue. One day it'll all make sense. If it ain't about power, then it don't make sense. But none of that money matters when you live in madness. So one day you figure out that all you got is this. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. I'm broadcasting from behind the enemy lines, known as USA Inc. Today's date is October the 13th. It is a Tuesday afternoon, and I hope that my voice finds you safe and sound behind these enemy lines. Let me go ahead and just get this out there before I tell you what's up for today's program on this October the 13th. Yesterday I mentioned Brother Dave, something must have happened with him, and I was kind of concerned about his well-being and his safety when he did not dial in to do his program. I have heard from him. He is safe and sound for the moment behind these enemy lines. He had a family issue that came up at the last minute, and you know, when those sort of things come up, family come first. And so that's why he was not on air yesterday, but he will do that program today. And again, I think it's an important program because they talk about a lot about people being prepared for natural disasters as well as man-made disasters. And today they will be talking about our Brother Dave, and you know, his knowledgeable callers will be talking about prepping, setting the table of preparation. And one of the most important legs is food. So they'll be talking about how, if you are on a budget and you don't have a whole lot of money, how you can still start stockpiling food for emergencies. And that's something that we all should be doing. How many times do we need to see disasters happen, like we saw during Katrina, like we saw down there in South Carolina? I'm glad my brother Max and his family is doing okay. But how many times do we see these natural disasters and just so many people are just unprepared? So Brother Dave will be on air with Tando Radio Show to talk about that today, about how to stockpile food on a budget. All right, so got that out the way. Some of the program coming up tonight in terms of live streaming on this Tuesday, after the Tando Radio Show, well, not right after Tando Radio Show, but at 10 o'clock p.m. Eastern time, you can tune in and take a listen to Why You Mad Son Radio, as they will be talking about the Justice or Else rally. Which brings me to what I wanted to say. Now, I know I said yesterday that I was going to play the Minister Farrakhan speech. It was like 2 hours and some change, perhaps, maybe 3 hours. I'm not sure. Pretty long speech. I said that I was going to play about 30 minutes of it and then broke down what he said. Look, I don't even want to waste my time doing that. And I don't want to waste your time doing that. if anything substantial was said, then I'm sure we would have heard about it by now. Somebody would be writing about it. If there was some kind of platform laid out, if something different was said that we haven't heard 100 times before was said, I'm sure we would have heard about it. All right. Now, I mean, some things that were said by some of the other speakers that I did hear, I thought was good information to put out. How many times on New Abolitionist Radio and on this program, speaking of Benjamin Crump, who was one of the speakers, and he said, he told people that we need you black people to turn up for jury duty. All right. And to stop throwing those jury summonses in the garbage, and you need to participate, because they don't want you to participate. They actually do not. Again, I'm like, you know, close to 50 years old now, and I've only been called to jury duty once. I ain't never been to prison. I don't have felony status. I have been registered to vote since I was 18 years old. I got a valid driver's license. And so I'm in that jury pool. So how is it that in 30 something years that I, well, maybe not 30, but 25 years, let's just say 25 years, I have never, except for one time, been called for jury duty. So I thought that was important. All right. But in terms of spending a whole lot of time reviewing Minister Farrakhan's speech, I apologize. I know I said I was going to do it, but I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. It's a waste of my time. It's a waste of your time. All right. Again, if anything important, anything different that we haven't heard 100 times before was said, I'm sure that people would have been writing about it. I'd be hearing about it. People will be quoting them on Facebook and all this and that. And, you know, I don't see that kind of information coming out of it. So basically, you know, I pretty much look at it as a family reunion. You got a whole bunch of black people to show up and to have a family reunion and listen to people, you know, speak. All right. I ain't got a problem with that. I love attending family reunions. OK, I love meeting my family members that I ain't seen in a long time, or, you know, meeting some new additions to the family. I ain't got nothing against family reunions. But in terms of black liberation, all right, just getting a bunch of people together is not going to lead to any kind of black liberation or overthrow of white supremacy as a global system. No, that's not going to happen. Black people by the millions on every Sunday morning, all right, every Wednesday night, millions of them come together each and every week, and that ain't led to no liberation. It ain't led to an end to modern slavery and human trafficking, because a lot of them people still think that slavery was abolished in 1865 and whatnot, and that's could nothing be further from the truth. So, you know, if you did not get a chance to see the entire program that was put on Saturday, there is a YouTube video. I linked to it yesterday for yesterday's podcast and broadcast, where it's a podcast now. So I'm sure you can find it. You can go to their website. You probably go to finalcall.com, or I think it's .com, or it might be ORG. I'm not sure, but I'm sure you can find it if you want to go review what was said. But I'm not interested in that. I thought I would be, but I'm not interested in that. And to be honest with you, you know, I'm kind of angry today. I'm kind of angry, not, you know, that I got steam coming out my ears and whatnot, and you could boil, you know, some eggs on my forehead. I'm not that kind of angry. I would say maybe angry is not the word that I should be using. It's not the correct word, but I'm just kind of annoyed. I'm kind of annoyed because I shared a news story on Facebook about the Palestinian uprising that's going on right now as we speak. And I'm not talking about a nonviolent uprising. I ain't talking about no marching with your hands up in the air or holding signs and stuff. No, they engaged in warfare right now in Jerusalem and other parts of Palestine as they fight against racism and white supremacy, because it is a global system. All right. And so, you know, I shared that. And I said that I guess this is what justice or else means to the Palestinians. This is the or else. What, we don't get justice, then the or else. This is the or else part. All right. And I'm saying, you know, hell, you know, who could be mad at them for that? But apparently some people are mad at them. And they made some asinine comments towards me, telling me if I don't have anything good to say, don't say nothing at all. Who the hell are you to be telling me what I can and cannot talk about? All right. I did not build a black media platform to not talk about things. All right. You don't have to agree with what I have to say. But if your grandma told you, if you don't have anything good to say, don't say nothing at all, then, you know, follow your grandma's advice and don't say nothing to me if you ain't got nothing good to say. See how that works? See how that works, how it can be flipped right back on you. All right. So I'm kind of pissed off about what was said. I'm also pissed off because a lot of black people just don't understand racism and white supremacy as a global system. They don't see it as a global system. All right. And, you know, they don't understand proxy racism and how even non-white people, yes, black people, can be tools of racism and white supremacy. I have made no secret about my past as a confused young black man who signed up to be an enemy soldier in the United States Army. All right, I didn't know any better at the time. I did not have all the information that I have now. I don't have the knowledge that I have now, and I didn't have the world view that I had as a 20-something year old. Yeah, I was 20 years old when I went into the United States Army. All right, but it was during that experience that, you know, when I was sent to Saudi Arabia during the Gulf War, that I started reading Malcolm X's biography. Totally changed my life. Totally changed my life. Public Enemy had already put me on that path to consciousness, listening to their music. And of course, you know, they sample Malcolm X and their music and other leaders and whatnot and things that were said. But it just, when I read Malcolm X's biography, just totally changed my world outlook. I started seeing myself, even though I had not coined the phrase tool of proxy racist tool of white supremacy back then. That's what I was. I came to realize that I was a tool of racism and white supremacy being used to kill and oppress other non-white people who have traditionally also been victims of the global system of white supremacy. So I don't believe in no 100% unity. You're just not gonna find it, man. You're not gonna find, they don't even have that on the continent of Africa. So don't be talking to me about we need to unify and all that. No, that is unrealistic. It is not going to happen. It ain't never happened, and it's not going to happen. Ain't nothing changed that's going to make that happen. All right. What we need is unity among people with like minds, people coming together, pooling their resources to make a change, to make a positive change. We don't need participation from everybody, because that ain't going to happen, because some of you are our enemies. I don't care. Like Neely Fuller said, man, that clip that I play sometimes of Neely Fuller talking about your skin color means nothing if you don't believe in practicing justice. Don't think that your black skin means you my friend, because you not. If you ain't down for black liberation, I don't want nothing to do with you. I ain't trying to hear it. I ain't trying to unify with you. I ain't trying to hold hands with you. I ain't trying to pray with you. I ain't trying to do nothing with you. Because you apparently are not in the struggle. You're not in a struggle. And I ain't talking about just paying lip service to nothing. So anyway, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to go on that. Yes, I did. I meant to go on that diatribe because I'm kind of pissed off right now. All right. I'm kind of pissed off. Don't be telling me I don't need to speak on nothing. I ain't no sacred cows. Ain't nobody above criticism. At least I'm constructive with my criticism. I don't engage in calling people frauds. I don't engage in other name calling and stuff like that. I try to stay codified, but I might lose some of my codification today. And y'all have to excuse me. That just kind of touched a raw nerve. You know, don't be telling, you know, who the hell are you to be telling me, you know, what I can and cannot talk about? I mean, seriously. Anyway, I'm gonna be on air probably about an hour today. I got some work I need to do to the website. Need to install some new media players for the individual radio stations that stream on Black Talk Radio Network to make it easier for those who have mobile phones. Because the website looks a lot different on a mobile phone than what it looks like when you're using a computer and a desktop computer, you know, with a big monitor and all that. It looks a lot different. And, you know, it's difficult, or it was more difficult than it needs to be for people to find the media player for the different independent radio stations, black radio stations, in that big green media player. So I've found a media player that I like and that works perfectly fine and functional, and everything loads up fast. So I need to install that on some of the other pages, and I just got a lot of upgrades to continue to work on and some problems to fix. So, you know, I try to keep my program to an hour, especially if I don't have a guest. But if I need to go over an hour because we got people calling in that want to discuss something or report something, then I'll go over an hour. I'm flexible on that. But today I decided that I was just going to share some news stories with you, some information and some commentary. Again, if you got something to share, something that you think needs to get out there, give us a call, 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549032 pound. Again, that's 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549032 pound. Greetings to those that dial in, that's already dialed in listening. Anytime you want to speak, just hit star 6 and 1 to comment. You can also hit me up via the studio line. That's 704-951-5030. That's 704-951-5030. While I'm saying that, let me make sure the studio line is open. All right. Yeah, it's open. Okay, good. Now, I want to talk about a couple of stories today. The NBA player for the Philadelphia 76ers, what was his name? Cephalosius. I'm not sure of his first name, but he looks like a black person, but I think he's from France or somewhere like that. So I think he's a black person, part of the African diaspora. I think he's originally from France. But y'all might have heard the story about him getting his leg broke by NYPD police officers, and then they charged him with a bunch of trumped up charges. Well, his trial is over on those trumped up charges, and thankfully you had a jury that was interested in practicing justice, and they found him not guilty on those trumped up charges. So we'll get into the details of that. Also, I, you know, the question I'm asking, well, it's not really a question, it's more like a statement, I guess. Of course, the corporate media did not cover this celebrity trial. This guy's a celebrity, right? NBA player, multimillionaire. They caused him to miss the playoffs last year, breaking his leg and whatnot. I even heard something about the Philadelphia 76ers was going to sue the NYPD and whatnot. And so, you know, considering how corporate media loves, you know, putting the spotlight on showcase people, celebrities that's in trouble or whatnot, you would think that there would have been more coverage of this trial, but you know, they trying to keep it quiet and whatnot. So there are some reasons for that. Also, on the good news front, I feel like the new abolitionist movement, which I have been a part of for the past 4 years, going on 5 years, that without much fanfare or corporate media attention, is quietly making an impact behind the scenes. As not only is there a major political candidate for president pushing the abolition of private prisons, but now comes a story from an investment website. It's one that I subscribe to, that we have been keeping an eye on. That's where we gather a lot of intelligence on the private prison corporations from these type of websites. But this one website that we use as a source, they are warning investors to stay away from investing in the world's largest private prison company. That's the Correction Corporations of America. And that was like shocking to me. And I was like, wow, I mean, they're really telling people not to invest their money, even though the Correction Corporation of America has this above average dividend that they're paying out and whatnot. And so, but you would tell people to stay away from investing in that corporation? I was like, that's just great. That's just wonderful in terms of propaganda warfare. All right, propaganda is part of any war effort, at least it should be. So in terms of propaganda, we'll take that as a win. To have a investment firm, a investment publication telling investors to stay away from investing in private prisons, man, I can't see that as anything but a victory. Did it end the war? Of course not. It didn't end the war. The war isn't over. But it is a battle. It is a battle. We're making gains on the battlefield. We're making it uncool to be associated with private prisons and whatnot. And you might say, well, how you know that has something to do with y'all? Well, because nobody has been consistently putting out information like we do, whether that be through the radio program, New Abolitionist Radio, which we have been doing for the past four, going on 5 years, through the Facebook pages, through the group Move to Abolish 21st Century Slavery and Human Trafficking. Nobody has been calling it slavery. Nobody has really been going after these private prisons, not on a consistent basis. And of course, it's not just us, but we have allies. We have allies, and we've been doing this along with our allies without any major celebrity endorsements, without any major funding or anything like that. And so, you know, I'm just proud. I'm proud. I'm proud of all the new abolitionists out there, because this would not be occurring if not for you, if not for the pressure from the grassroots level on these people, on the system, to end this element of slavery. And again, they're only focusing on one element, that's the private prison industry, but it is a very important element of 21st century slavery and human trafficking. All right, because it is from them, those corporations who got together and wrote up this legislation that has led to what some people call mass incarceration. All right, you eliminate them, you eliminate a very important enemy. All right, a source of many of the problems in terms of legislation and things of that nature. All right, so also tonight, y'all know that the Democratic Party will have its first debate tonight. Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders are the two front runners thus far in the race for the Democratic Party's nomination for president for the 2016 general elections. You got other Democrats in it. Martin O'Malley, I think he used to be a mayor of Baltimore or something like that. Might have been a governor of Maryland at one time. I'm not sure. But he's still in the race. There's some other ones, but, you know, they ain't really getting a whole lot of attention. They're not really polling that well, but You know, they will have a debate tonight. And so the thing to watch for tonight, and I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to watch it all live and whatnot, but I'm certainly going to DVR it. And but the thing to watch for is to see if, because it's going to be on CNN, White People's Press, White Supremacist Media, all right? And so the thing to watch for is the questions. That's what you want to be paying attention to, is the questions that they ask, all right? And so I would not be surprised if they do not ask any questions about the legislation, Justice is Not for Sale Act 2015, which would abolish all private prisons and jails in this country. I would not be surprised if they do not ask anything about quote unquote mass incarceration policies or any of the legislation, the new legislation that has been introduced by a bipartisan group of senators, which I talked about on an earlier broadcast last week, I believe I did, and I said it just falls very short of abolitionists. And we not co-signing on to it. Will it let people out of prison? Yeah, it'll let people out of prison. And we're happy to see anybody that's enslaved get their freedom. We're happy for them. But at the same time, it still leaves in place the mechanism for enslavement. So what? You won't be locking up people, enslaving them for 20 years. Oh, you just going to be, you going to reduce the penalty to 10 years or to 5 years. Well, guess what? That's still 5 years too many. 1 year, 1 day in slavery is a 1 day too many. So we will be paying attention. I know I will be paying attention to the questions that are put to people, these politicians that's seeking the Democratic nomination and holding in their first debate tonight, all right? Because, you know, the questions are controlled by white supremacists, all right? And so I don't really expect them to ask any kind of meaningful questions that gets at the heart of the issues, but we'll see. You know, maybe I hope I'm wrong, but I just don't expect any real questions to be put to them. I expect a whole bunch of talk about gun control, a whole bunch of talk about abortion, a whole bunch of talk about women's rights and all of that kind of stuff. I do not expect a whole lot of questions about 21st century slavery and human trafficking, but we'll see. We'll see. And then, again, like I stated, I shared a story earlier. I'm going to share it with you on air. The Palestinians are in the midst of a violent uprising against white supremacy and apartheid Israel. This could lead to another massacre of Palestinians. Now, this is getting back to what got me pissed off. Why do I care? Why do I care if Palestinians is getting killed, or why do I care about their struggle? Well, because the struggle against white supremacy is a global one. And these are non-white people, and some of them are black. Not that their skin color matters. What matters is if they believe in practicing justice. But I'm for whoever is rising up against racism and white supremacy. I'm against white supremacists, no matter what nationality they go under. And you better believe that them people in Israel, the Israelis, and I'm excluding the non-white Israelis, I'm excluding the black Jews, I'm excluding the Ethiopians, I'm excluding the African immigrants who are suffering racism and white supremacy under the Israeli government. But a lot of them also support racism and white supremacy against the Palestinian people. So again, your skin color don't mean a damn thing to me if you ain't practicing justice, just like Mr. Neely Fuller Jr. said. Don't mean nothing. What do you say? I don't care. You know, you talking about you proud to be a Frenchman. You proud to be an Englishman? You proud to be this or that? But you shouldn't be proud of none of that if you don't believe in practicing justice. What is there to be proud of? Nothing, not a damn thing. Even with it, it went as far as to say, if you don't believe in practicing justice, you don't have any business breathing. That's kind of like a radical view, isn't it? Saying we'd be better off without you if you don't believe in practicing justice. So, yeah, I want to share that story. I'm going to share that story with you. And again, you know, anybody that has a perspective they like to share, any news they want to share, and give us a call and share that news. You ain't got to be in agreement with me. I don't think one, just like I don't think 100% unity is possible, I don't believe 100% agreement is possible. As long as we agree that white supremacy is a problem and we need to end it, then yeah, you know, that's the most important thing. We can unify around that, then let's go for that. I ain't trying to unify, really, to be honest with you. I ain't trying to unify around no flag. I ain't trying to unify around no individual people or no institutions or no organizations or skin color or anything like that. Not trying to do. I'm trying to unify around the issue of justice. That's what I'm trying to do. So I'm going to take a station identification break, play some quick message music, and then when we come back, I will jump into the first story of the day. It won't take me long, but I want to share this story because I think it's important in terms of the propaganda warfare against police terrorism. All right, you're listening to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed, and yes, indeed, I'm broadcasting from behind these enemy lines. Stay tuned.
This is Brother Elliot, host of Time for an Awakening, and you're listening to Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennium.
I don't worry. I tell you, I'm a man who believed that I died 20 years ago. And I live like a man who is dead already. I have no fear whatsoever of anybody or anything.
The power structure has successfully created the image of the American Negro as someone with no confidence, no militancy. And they had done this by giving him images of heroes that weren't truly militant or confident. And now here come Cassius. The exact contrast of everything that was representative of the Negro image. He said he was the greatest. All of the odds were against him. He upset the odds makers. He won. He became victorious. He became the champ. They knew that as soon as if people began to identify with Cassius and the type of image he was creating, they were going to have trouble out of these Negroes because they'd have Negroes walking around the street saying, I'm the greatest, 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 greatest.
The countercurrentnews.com, and I think that is a good website, a good source of information, as they do share a lot of stories and give a lot of great insight in terms of police terrorism behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. So countercurrentnews is where this story is coming to you. It was published yesterday, actually. Yeah, it was published yesterday. They start off by saying it was painfully obvious that the NBA player Thabo Sefolosha was a victim of police brutality, but even though he was supposedly considered innocent until proven guilty, the Atlanta Hawks basketball player was attacked and arrested on spurious charges. The New York City police knocked Sefolosha out of this year's playoffs after the arresting officer, I think they meant last year. What's the NBA playoffs? That was probably at the beginning of the year. Anyway, the arresting officers broke his leg. But now, Sefolosha was found not guilty by a jury in Manhattan. The acquittal covered all charges which stem from the confrontation outside a nightclub back in April. The jury in this case was composed of 3 men and 3 women. It only took them a deliberation of 45 minutes before they found Cephalosha not guilty of the misdemeanor charges of obstructing governmental administration, disorderly conduct, and resisting arrest that the NYPD trumped up. Cephalosha, 31 years old, cried after hearing the verdict. He mouthed the words, "Thank you," to the jurors and hugged his lawyer, Alex Spiro. "This is just an incredible moment to be able to clear my name," Cephalosha said on the steps of the Manhattan Criminal Courts building. "I just wanted truth to come out and justice to come out. I knew what happened that night, and I feel like the world now knows as well." Now, they go on to say, talk about how the mainstream media basically has ignored this. You know, I'm one who is always checking the Google News feed, and that's mainly why I'm on Facebook, not just to spread information, but to get information from other people as well. All right, and so I really didn't hear anything about this story except for, you know, from those in my close circle that I follow, and they shared the story from Countercurrent News. I ain't hear about it, didn't see it on NBC or ABC or any other corporate media websites. And so, you know, they like they're asking in countercurrentnews.com why the media, I'm not going to use that racist word, they don't know any better, but yeah, why the whiteout? Why the media whiteout? Okay, why? Where is the lack of coverage? This was a big deal when it first happened. It was all reporting on it, all right? And so, you know, why you ain't reporting that the man was found innocent and that the NYPD obviously lied on this man and put some trumped up charges on him, all right? So, I mean, it seems to me they should be charged. Anytime a jury finds somebody not guilty of trumped up charges and that it is discovered that these police officers lied, seems to me those police officers should be charged with filing false police reports. I don't know if they have any statutes on the books about, you know, making up stuff and charging people with crimes when obviously they didn't commit a crime. If they don't have anything on the books, perhaps something needs to be put on the books. I can think of what, I mean, the way these prosecutors get creative, you know, what about obstruction of justice? This is certainly, if you're going to lie on somebody and if you're going to charge them with false charges and try to get them put into slavery or extort money from them for, you know, cause they will have to pay a fine or whatnot, then, you know, that's an obstruction of justice. It ain't implementing justice. It's not guarding justice. It's injustice. And so it's not just enough, in my opinion, for this man to be set free. What has to happen for justice to be complete is for those who broke his leg to be charged with assault and causing serious injury to this man. All right. And then also lying on top of that to cover up their crimes. So simply, you know, this man, which I'm happy for him, being found not guilty, that is not justice. That's not justice. It's justice for him in the limited view, the way he's looking at it. Yeah, it is justice, but in a limited scope. To complete justice, these cops will have to be arrested. They will have to be convicted, and they will have to be penalized for their crimes. But that ain't, I don't see that happening. I haven't read anything about them being brought up on charges or anything like that. So, you know, that we're a long way from justice, but it is good to hear. It's good to hear that a jury did not just go along with these lying cops and find the man guilty because the police said he did it. And that is what happened. That's what Benjamin Crump was talking about the other day when he was talking about, you know, black people Stop throwing them jury summonses in the trash. When you go down for jury duty, don't make excuses. Don't come up with excuses and tell the judge, well, I can't serve on the jury because of whatever excuse you come up with. You should be doing everything possible to get on that jury because they're doing everything possible to keep you off that jury. So you want to do what they don't want you to do is the way I look at it. It's simple as that. If a white supremacist don't want me to do something, then that's what I should be doing. That's the way I look at it. So I don't know what the racial makeup was of this jury. I guess that's not important at this juncture. But I mean, it would be interesting to see, because a lot of these predominantly white juries, and I would imagine the jury pool in Manhattan District is predominantly white. So perhaps these were some white people. And again, I don't know. I'm just speculating. I'm just, you know, saying, you know, what should be obvious. But perhaps these white people just didn't have any kind of implicit bias. Maybe they had deprogrammed themselves of racism and white supremacy, and they wasn't going along with the system. They didn't care if one of them cops was black and he got on the stand and lied right along with his white buddies and whatnot. They didn't care. They found the man, based on the evidence, not guilty. So, you know, these juries... again, just like how I say, if it was not for cops on the street carrying out the orders of white supremacists, without them, we wouldn't have the world's largest prison labor farm in the world. We wouldn't have it. Also, we can take that further and say, without these juries convicting people, we wouldn't have the world's largest prison slave labor force in the world. So jury duty is important. It is very important. So I know some people, they don't like Benjamin Crump for whatever reason. Some of those reasons may be valid. Some of them may be invalid. But if the man says something that's truthful, that's important, I mean, how can you be against the truth? And so, you know, he did say that participating in jury duty is important for black people. All right, it is important for black people that believe and practice in justice. Let me put it that way. All right, that practice justice, who are not affected themselves with that white supremacy chip and just going along with the white supremacist program. So good to hear that the brother was found not guilty. Now, I want to move to this next story. I was very excited. Max shared this story, Max Parthas, one of the founding members of the Move to Abolish 21st Century Slavery New Abolitionist group that we have on Facebook, just an informal group. We don't have nonprofit status. We didn't, you know, register a 501c3. We're just an informal group of people of like mind. Of many different racial classifications, religious classifications, even political classifications, who have come together and recognized that slavery has never been abolished and that we need to be doing something to end this evil institution of slavery. And so he shared that on New Abolitionist Radio's Facebook page, and I was very excited to read it yesterday. Because when you got an investment firm, well, I don't know if I can't call it investment firm. Let's say a media outlet that focuses on nothing but the stock market and making recommendations on where people should be putting their money. When you get a publication such as that telling people not to invest their money in private prisons, that's a big deal. That is a big deal. And if not for the work of new abolitionists, people like my brother Max Parthas, Yohanan Elijah, all the other people, Christopher Irvin, I could just name people, you know, from our group, who have been engaged in educating the public over the past 4 to 5 years. And we're starting to see some of the fruits of that labor, because, again, you could turn on, let's say, black radio stations, if you want to call them that. They ain't talking about this on the Steve Harvey radio show. What's that other guy named? He got a radio show. I can't think of his name. He has a cruise, and they be going on cruise. They play a lot of old school music and whatnot, and they talk about issues sometimes and whatnot. Tom Joyner, yeah. We don't hear them on there talking about 21st. Hey, listeners, did y'all know slavery was never abolished? That all those lies your teacher told you? Yeah, the 13th Amendment did not abolish slavery. So, you know, ain't nobody out there educating the public on 21st century slavery and human trafficking like the new abolitionist movement is doing it. And that includes some of those, or some of these people that belong to the group are in organizations, student organizations, and, you know, but they're not big giant organizations. They got a whole lot of money. You know, they're getting a whole bunch of money from George Soros or the Ford Foundation or the Arthur T. Viney and Melinda and Bill Gates Foundation. They not getting funded from them people. No, we've been scraping pennies. People been throwing a dollar in the pot, you know, and still we struggle to raise money. But yet we have been able to make an impact because we are relentless. We are relentless and we are consistent about using the proper language, accurate language, in describing what the problem is and engaging other people and talking to other people and spreading the abolitionist message. So don't think that, and I'm speaking to my fellow abolitionists, don't think that your efforts have been in vain just because we don't got CBS or NBC or you know, Al Sharpton ain't inviting us to come on his program and talk about slavery and human trafficking. And, you know, just because you don't see us on TV don't mean we ain't making a difference, because some of them people you do see on TV, we having conversations with behind the scenes. All right. So it's just a very proud moment for me and the movement. And I make no mistake, these are just minor. These are minor victories in terms of propaganda. Ain't no, you know, ain't nothing to go out and have a party for. But we do need to acknowledge the small victories so that we can let people know that your work is not in vain. Your work is not in vain. You have made the issue of private prisons mainstream in this country. Ain't nobody else did that. Ain't nobody been pushing for the past 4 or 5 years like we've been pushing. So let me go ahead and share this story with you that has me so excited. One of the websites that we use as a regular source of information in our intelligence gathering information on corporations involved in 21st century slavery and human trafficking. Excuse me, I just had an interruption there from my grandson. All right, so apologies for that. Anyway, one of the websites that we gather intelligence on these corporations is called SeekingAlpha.com. Again, it's called SeekingAlpha.com. And all they talk about is the stock markets. They talk about corporations and they give, you know, analysis on different companies and whether or not people should invest in these companies. And they analyze, you know, the stock market and trends and things of that nature. And it has been a good source of intelligence for us in the new abolitionist movement. But I was very shocked to see that you had this guy by the name of Evan Buck. Is his name. He is described as a investor, a long-term horizon IPOs, and well, these are the things he writes about. Okay, long-term investments, IPOs, and dividend investing. All right, so that's Evan Buck wrote on October the 8th, which was what? How many weeks ago? Well, about a week ago, 5 days ago, maybe. Yeah, about 5 days ago. Avoiding Correction Corporation of America's Tempting Yield. All right. And so I'm just going to read some of this. He provides in his summary. He said, Correction Corporation of America, a REIT that both owns and operates detention facilities and touts a seemingly impressive 7.2% dividend yield. So apparently that's a high dividend yield. However, the company has a buffet of issues facing its business model and dividend itself. Bullet point number three. Not only is the public souring on for-profit business models, but the government may step in and complicate matters. The public, again, he's talking about the court of public opinion, all right, and that people are being turned off by learning that people are being enslaved so that people can fatten their bank accounts, not cause they're a danger to society or they have committed a crime against another individual or anything like that. No, this is a business model that creates criminals so that then others can profit off of their criminalization. So that's what he's talking about in terms of public souring. He also says, unless you're a fan of playing Russian roulette with your money, I would caution against investing in Corrections Corporation. All right. This is, let me jump down to, he talks about what the company does. I've already told you what they do. They practice 21st century slavery and human trafficking more than any other corporation in the world, maybe outside of USA Inc. Cause, you know, again, what we call in the US government is indeed actually a corporation that was incorporated in 1871. So outside of USA Inc., nobody practices slavery and human trafficking on a bigger scale than the Correction Corporation of America. Now, this is what he says in the section that he has titled, Why the Company is in Trouble. Says, however, CCA has several headwinds facing its business model, which all could threaten the price dividend. For starters, public sentiment is quickly souring on for-profit prisons. The company is losing contracts across the country and is the subject of increasingly intense scrutiny, along with sensationalist news stories. Many people are shocked by CCA's long history of political activism and lobbying. See, he talking about, again, what I have talked about or mentioned earlier, but what we talk about all the time in terms of abolitionism on New Abolitionist Radio. The private prison lobbyists are the ones that are responsible for crafting, creating, and pushing this, what people are calling, mass incarceration legislation. The corporate, y'all, many people know that corporations do write laws. But see, we think of it in terms of Wall Street bankers and bankers getting breaks and, you know, laws being written for the wealthiest people. And that also applies to the 21st century slavery and human trafficking. Those corporations that are involved in that do the same thing. They pool their resources together, they write model legislation, and then they bring in the politicians on the state level and the federal level to then go back to their state or go to the federal government and push this legislation. Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton didn't come up with the three strikes legislation. The private prison industry came up with that. They didn't come up with that. No, they are the puppets of the private prison enslavers. So that's what he's talking about, that people are shocked by the CCA's long history of political activism and lobbying. I don't think that they are shocked by the action itself, but I think they are shocked because they didn't know. They knew, you know, corporations do control Washington, but they didn't know about the 21st century slavery and human trafficking. part of it. They wasn't viewing it like that. So then he also goes on to mention Bernie Sanders, the Democratic Socialist Senator from Vermont and rising presidential candidate, has made it a point to lambast private prisons. They quote him, and he says that it is morally repugnant and a national tragedy that we have privatized prisons all over America. In my view, corporations should not be allowed to make a profit by building more jails and keeping more Americans behind bars. Again, that's a quote from Bernie Sanders. Let me ask y'all a question. Did y'all hear Bernie Sanders saying that last year or the year before that or the year before that? What about 10 years ago? What about 20 years ago? I mean, he's been a politician for a very, very long time. Do y'all think he just came out with this on his own? Or do y'all think that people been putting pressure on him, on the system in general, and he saw this as a way to get votes? Well, yeah, I don't care if he's sincere about it or not. All I know is the legislation will do what we want it to do, and that's abolish private prisons. And so if he thinks that that's a way to get votes, well, then that's what he thinks. I don't care about that. I do care about getting votes to pass this legislation to abolish these private prisons and jails in this country. All right? And so that's because of the new abolitionist movement that he has even taken this position. And, you know, as we have reported in the past, that Max in particular has met with members of the Bernie Sanders presidential campaign. He has met with them behind closed doors, out of the public eye, and talked about this. This is slavery. This ain't mass incarceration. This is slavery. So again, like Frederick Douglass, one of our great abolitionist ancestors, said that power concedes nothing without a demand. We have been strongly demanding an end to slavery and human trafficking for the past 4 to 5 years. Individually, some of us have been doing it longer than that. But we come together to amplify all of our voices. So, you know, without that demand, then, you know, this man would not even be pushing such a thing. Now, this guy who wrote this article, again, this is an article on Seeking Alpha, an investment website. He goes on to say, these factors could significantly hurt the company's bottom line, especially if public outcry sparks government regulations on the issue. Well, dude, that ship has already sailed. The public outcry is out there. All right. And now we got all kind of legislation being introduced to kind of regulate it. Much of it falls very way, way short of abolitionism, but it will bring some relief to some of those who are enslaved on these prison populations. So it is up to us to just not stop and say, OK, our job is done. We got 100,000 people out of federal prisons and whatnot. So let's call it a day. Let's say that it's a success and let's just go right off into the sunset. Hell no. We will not stop until slavery and human trafficking is abolished, period. And we ain't talking about the stuff that's already illegal. See, it's illegal for me to go out here and look for runaway teen girls and then, you know, give them a place to stay and then pimp them out on the street, which that would be human trafficking. That's already illegal. I can go to jail for that. I can go to prison for that. And I should if I was to engage in some. But that's already illegal. That's already been, you know, deemed unacceptable behavior. But what we're focused on is to legalize slavery in human trafficking. We, not to say we don't care about the other slavery in human trafficking that individuals are doing out there in the streets, out there in the jungles, out there, wherever. But those things are already illegal. If you get caught, you will be prosecuted. But what we are wanting to see is an end to legalized slavery and human trafficking. Now, he says that another possibility that could cause trouble for CCA is drug legalization. According to the most recent federal statistics, a staggering 50% of federal inmates are serving time on drug charges. States across the country are pondering or making moves to decriminalize marijuana, and support for drug legalization is growing. These factors present another potential negative external to CCA's business model. I've never heard this word before. Anyway, this is why I'm saying, this is why I have said in the past, you don't have to support drug use, all right, to be against people being enslaved over it. Putting people in prison for smoking weed, how is that logical? How is that an offense punishable by slavery? Now, I know a lot of churches and stuff, they like to be on what they call, they try to make it a moral issue, all right? They don't want to support the decriminalization of drugs or the legalization of drugs because they think that, well, that's me endorsing drug use. No, it's not. No, it's not. It's saying that I don't think that people who have drug problems should be in prison for those problems, that we should be getting them help. We should be spending money on rehabilitation if they want it. But, you know, speaking from a religious perspective, God don't force himself on no one. Jesus didn't go around telling people to lock people up for smoking weed or shooting heroin, or, you know, he said heal the sick. That's what he said do. If those people sick, and indeed drug addiction is a health issue, then they in need of a doctor. They not in need of a prison guard. They not in need of a prison warden. They not in need of enslavement. And then, you know, I just heard some people, I respect, but again, you're not going to be in 100% agreement with everybody. But I have heard some people who are counter-racist. I'm not going to say they call themselves counter-racist, even though sometimes I question the logic of some of the things that they were saying. But I've heard some people say, oh, they just legalizing weed so that black people will keep smoking it, and more and more black people will start smoking it, and then they'll be sitting around and being unproductive, and so this is really white supremacists trying to hurt black people by legalizing weed. That's nonsense. That ain't supported by no facts, and it is not logical. Anybody who has studied the issue of what they call mass incarceration knows that Richard Nixon, behind closed doors, and we only know because it was recorded and because some of the members of his cabinet came out and told it after he was dead, that the whole reason that Nixon, along with that majority Democratic Congress back in 1972, I think, the whole reason for the creation of the Drug Enforcement Administration was to target black people without seeming like it. We're not going after black people. We're just going after people who smoke weed. We're not targeting black people. We're just targeting heroin addicts. We're not targeting black people. We're just targeting low-level street dealers to help black people. There ain't nothing could be further from the truth. Nothing could be further from the truth. black people were actually doing a whole lot better before this modern drug war. They were more prosperous. We had our own businesses. We had our own schools and all of that, which integration really harmed us in that respect. So anybody that's telling you that drug legalization is to target black people, that is not logical. It makes absolutely no sense when white supremacists themselves have said, and the facts say, regardless of what they say, the evidence says they have used these drug laws to target black people. Because white people, is more of them using these drugs than anybody else on the face of the planet. And if they was really using these laws to go after drug dealers and drug addicts and all of that, then the white people would be the predominant population in modern day slavery and human trafficking. And here we have an investor, a person who studies these issues, saying that drug legalization would be a tremendous blow to the profitability of these private prison enslavers and human traffickers. He goes on to write, but even now, CCA's cash flow relative to the dividend is concerning. According to data from Yahoo Finance, CCA currently allocates 118% of its annual profits to fund the dividend. And over the past 12 months, for example, CCA reported net income of $210 million, but free cash flow of only about $185 million. 12% below the company's reported net income. If CCA can't churn out enough profits to be able to pay out the dividend, needless to say, the dividend will be in peril. So Uncle Sam potentially throwing CCA in the slammer along with CCA's worsening outlook should concern you that Correction Corporation of America's tempting yield appears to be nothing more than a dividend trap. Look elsewhere to find relative stability in a volatile market. This is a big deal, people. This is the first time I have ever, again, I've been following Seeking Alpha and some of these other investment websites for the past 4 years. This is the first time I have ever seen an article written on those type of websites telling people not to invest in private prison companies because they are in trouble. This is a big deal. We'll take this as a sign that we are advancing on the battlefield, that we are marching closer and closer to our goal of abolishing slavery and human trafficking as authorized by the 13th Amendment, which did not abolish slavery but amended it. So that's great news, and I was just so I need good news some of the time, because we report so much bad news because it's hell living behind these enemy lines, and we're not a station that we just trying to make you feel good and forget about your troubles and blah, 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 and all of that. You know, we're not trying to provide an escape from reality from you, but no, we trying to hit you in the face with that reality so that you will be motivated to rise up and play whatever role the Creator has set for you to play that you determine in this war against the global system of racism and white supremacy. Good news, and we need that good news. All right, the next article I will get to, I'm going to take a break, play some message music, and then I'm going to come back to this issue with these Palestinians having a violent uprising against white supremacy in the apartheid state of Israel. I guess they are engaged in the or else part of not getting justice. All right, that's the or else part, or it could be one of the or else's. All right, because, you know, we can think of a number of things. Or else we will not buy from your store, or you know, there's a number of else's. It ain't all got to be, you know, warfare or violent warfare, but you know, sometimes it comes down to that. It comes down to that. When they're steadily killing you, I don't see nothing wrong with inflicting casualties on their side. All right. That's the whole purpose of war, right? All right. So we'll talk about that story on the other side. And again, I'll tell you why I care. I will tell you. I don't give a damn about the system of racism and white supremacy and their racial classification of these people, even though some of them are African descending people. But don't talk to me about these being Arabs, and so I don't care about them suffering under racism and white supremacy. Especially, yeah, I know you ain't coming out your mouth like that towards me when, you know, Minister Farrakhan says, "Assalamu alaikum" to you. That's an Arab greeting, right? It ain't no damn African greeting. So don't talk to me about somebody else being not black or not African when the person that you telling me I should say nothing about is greeting black folks with an Arab greeting. So anyway, I will continue. Anyway, you're listening to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. I broadcast from behind these enemy lines. I ain't trying to sugarcoat nothing. I try to stay codified, but sometimes I lose my codification because I'm a human being. I make mistakes sometimes, but I will definitely keep it real with you, and I will tell you exactly what is on my mind. I most certainly will do that. If you got something to say, anything you want to bring up, area code 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032-POUND. Hit *6 and 1 to comment on air. You can use the web-based flash phone to call from anywhere in the world as long as you got an internet connection and a headset. You can also hit us up on the studio line, 704-951-5030. I am working on getting James Klingman to come on the program Thursday. That looks like it's going to happen, and we will be talking about an upcoming event that's going down in just outside of Philadelphia. So if you in that region, you may want to think about attending. This is an event that's part of the 1 million conscious black voters and contributors. Those are a group of people who have come together, and they ain't about no nonsense. They ain't about no feel good sermons or nothing like that. They about putting in some work and coming up with some solutions, and we want to hear from them and support their efforts against racism and white supremacy in the area of politics and economics. Stay tuned. We will be back on the other side.
I believe that I'm going to be able to die high off the people. I believe that I will be able to in the International Revolutionary Proletarian Struggle. And I hope that each one of you will be able to die in the International Proletarian Revolutionary Struggle, or you didn't leave a living. And I think that struggle is going to come. Why don't you live for the people? Why don't you struggle for the people? Why don't you die?
No, it really isn't. Because, see, people are thinking in terms of, well, they want to brag about being black, which means that they are implying that there's something incorrect about being white, even though these are the creations of the Creator. See, and then so everybody gets into this black pride thing or white pride thing, and people immediately start taking sides. It's not about taking sides based on black and white. It's about taking sides based on justice and non-justice. Well, that's what you're really aiming for. Being black doesn't mean anything if you don't believe in justice. And being white doesn't mean anything if you don't believe in justice. Except you mean in, you believe in non-justice. And that doesn't make any difference what shade you are, or how tall you are, or who your cousin was, or anything like that. Or what so-called nationality you have, like a lot of people say that they take pride in being an Englishman, or take pride in being a Frenchman, or take pride in being Afrocentric. Well, you're not supposed to be proud of any of those things if you don't believe in justice, because these words mean nothing. No nationality means anything. And waving a flag if you don't believe in not mistreating people. You've got to believe in not mistreating people, and you got to believe in helping people that need help the most. Otherwise, you don't even have any business breathing.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com. And welcome back. Again, you're listening to Black Talk Radio News. Scotty Reed in on this mic from behind these enemy lines. The Washington Post, and again, I need to say this every time I pull up or I share with you a story from White Supremacy Press, because the Washington Post, I have seen enough articles from them with white supremacy codified language contained in it that you have to be careful. I have to warn people. But they did come out with an article. It's titled "Palestinians Kill Three Israelis as Violence Mounts in Day of Rage." It says that three Israelis were killed and nearly two dozen injured in a series of Palestinian attacks on Tuesday. That's today. Sparking calls by Israeli officials to cordon off Arab neighborhoods in Jerusalem, and a decision by the Security Cabinet to place soldiers in city centers to support the police. The moves come amid rising bloodshed and unrest on a day of rage proclaimed by Palestinian groups. Almost 2 weeks of daily violence, including a spate of attacks by knife-wielding Palestinian teenagers, has left Israelis deeply shaken and fearful of another sustained Palestinian uprising. In Tuesday's attacks, Palestinians used knives, a car, a gun, and a meat cleaver to kill and injure Jewish Israelis. As many as 22 Israelis were reported wounded. Now, let me stop there. Because this word Jew, or the Jewish religion, is used to confuse a lot of people about white supremacy. I've said it in the past before that a Jew is not a racial classification. I don't care how much white supremacy media wants to tell you that they are a distinct racial group. They are not. They are not. And DNA science has proven that they are white people. They are the descendants of Europeans. They either came from France, they either came from Poland, they either came from Russia, they either came from Germany, all right? And then there are different classifications of Jews, all right? And the Ashkenazi, those who are called and even call themselves Ashkenazi Jews, all right, those are white people. Those are white people. They are white supremacists, and they practice white supremacy not only against Arabs and black and African Palestinians, but they also practice white supremacy against the black Jews that's in that country. They just admitted, the Israeli government, that is, not that long ago, maybe a year ago, half a year ago, I'm not sure. I know I did report on it, but they just admitted to running a sterilization program against the Ethiopian Jewish community inside of Israel. And they cut their population numbers in half in under 10 years. That's genocide, people. That's genocide. So I know that a lot of people have sympathy for people who call themselves Jews because of what Hitler did and all of that. But guess what? Like Neely Fuller said, I don't care you waving that Jewish flag or you talking about the Holocaust and what happened during World War II and whatnot, and how people who call themselves Jews been persecuted. Just like I said about John Lewis, I don't give a damn about what John Lewis did 50 years ago. I know what John Lewis is doing today, and he's supporting white supremacy. He has taken money from these private prison corporations. He is endorsing Hillary Clinton, one of the most powerful white supremacists in the world, as the next CEO of America. So I don't care about what happened 50 years ago. I care about what's happening today. In more recent history. And how incorrect is it for you to say, well, my parents and my grandparents was a victim of Nazi Germany, and then you go and practice the same sort of genocide and racism against non-white people in that area of the world, in that part of Africa. And that is Africa. They call it the Middle East. That's Northern Africa, okay? Goes on to say, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu told the Israeli parliament Israel will settle the score with the murderers and those who helped them. We will cut the hands of whoever tries to hurt us. Now, ain't nobody telling Benjamin Netanyahu, man, you know, violence isn't the answer. You don't meet violence with violence. You should turn the other cheek and all this and that. No, 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 no. They fully behind the violence that white supremacists commit against other non-white people. And if we want to bring religion into it, I know that Bible says violence begets violence, right? You reap what you sow. And you've been sowing seeds of genocide against the people of Palestine since the 1940s and even before then. I mean, I've read stuff of going back to the 1930s when the white supremacists known as the British, under the authority of the Queen of England, was practicing, was colonizing Palestine, and then turned it over to, I think, the United Nations, and everybody co-signed on it. Oh, we just going to build this nation called Israel right on top of a nation that's already there. Nation full of white, non-white people. So, don't talk to me about violence is not the answer and all this and that, because I don't know any other answer when somebody's trying to kill you except to kill them before they can kill you. Palestinian leader and former peace negotiator Saeb Erekat blamed the Israelis for the escalation. He charged that Israel's 48-year military occupation of the West Bank has spread a culture of hate and racism that justifies atrocities, including collective punishment and cold-blooded executions. Y'all see, like, during the last Israeli offensive in Gaza, last summer, all them dead babies and stuff? They don't care, man. They kill indiscriminately. They don't care if you young or old. All they care about is if you Palestinian or if you non-white. So, This has been going on, as the article indicates, for the past 2 weeks. But you're not seeing much mainstream media coverage of it. I wonder why. Maybe they don't want other oppressed people to be inspired to engage in their own uprisings against racism and white supremacy. So this is a pretty long article. I have linked to it. You can read it if you choose. Just remember the source. Remember the source, and you have to have you have to be wary of white supremacy propaganda being embedded in these type of articles. All right. And so what I've read thus far seem to be objective. But again, you know, when you get to the rest of it, I'm picking up some of that white supremacist codification in the language that's being used. But although I will admit most of it is the quotes from white supremacists that is in. So anyway, the State Department, the U.S. State Department, John Kirby said in a statement, "The United States condemns in the strongest terms today's terrorist attacks against Israeli civilians. We mourn any loss of innocent life, Israeli or Palestinian. We continue to stress the importance of condemning violence and combating incitement." Well, guess what? Last year, I didn't hear the State Department saying they was against violence when they approved all of those weapons and ammunitions being transferred to the Israeli military so that they can continue to kill Palestinians in the Gaza. See what I'm saying? They want non-white people, the oppressed, the victims of racism and white supremacy. They always talking non-violence when you start rising up. But for 48 years, when have they ever said anything about the violence that the Israelis have been committing against the indigenous inhabitants of Palestine? They ain't said a word. They've been supporting it. That's what they've been doing. So I guess the Palestinians got tired of waiting for justice and said, you know what, or else. This is the or else part of it. Let me go to the phone lines. Area code 404, thank you for calling in. Go ahead and share whatever it is that's on your mind.
Hey, greetings to you, Scotty.
Greetings. Sister Sarah, I'm greetings to you.
Is that me?
You said that you were hearing an echo? We've been having that problem. Give me just a moment. Let me mute you and unmute you. Sometimes that clears it up. All right, try it now.
Okay. It went away. Is that? Oh, yeah, it's on now. Yeah, greetings to you and greetings to to the listening audience, Scotty.
Greetings.
A couple things I wanted to touch on if I may. Hello?
Yes, we're listening. We hear you.
Okay. First thing that you were mentioning in that article that you were reading from, I believe you said it was the Washington Post with the these people who call themselves Jews.
Yes, ma'am.
And I do agree with you because Jew is not a racial identity. When these people apply for their passports and their driver's license on it and they ask for a racial category that is still being used, there is no category for a Jew. It's either you're white, black, Hispanic, or whatever. I don't even think Hispanic is a racial category that you have to choose from to put on that passport. So for them to try and confuse the mixture and everybody running around, they're getting all confused because, as you said, there are different categories of Jews. There's the white Jews, the Ashkenazi, there's the Sephardim, and, of course, the so-called Falashic people out there. So even though they all want to operate on that blanket of calling themselves Jews, all three of these groups of Jewish people, they have their different tiers that they're put into, with the Ashkenazi being at the top of the list and everybody else falling down somewhere in the bottom. And I agree with you when you were stating about the violence and everything. You see, we're only told, if this only applies to black people, and this is something that we need to get into our head. We always like to run around here and talk about you want to be peaceful and you want to be this and that. This is only a language that's tailored towards black people to get us not to be reactive, for us to think that there is some kind of honor in being in long suffering, that that suffering is a part of our criteria. And I think a lot of us have embedded that into our psyche, and it comes from this religion. Especially you go to most Black churches, and any given Sunday, somewhere in that ceremony, that sermon, they're always going to input into this about some Jesus, how God bled on a cross for you. And we take that into our psyche, and we seem to believe that suffering is a noble gesture, and there is honor in suffering. And we're the only people on this planet who go through that insanity. And we need to stop it, because there's no honor in suffering. Not needless suffering. Suffering, yes. If my child is out here and somebody's about to take off him, and I jump out there and I want to save my child, and if I got shot in the process in doing so, then that's a noble cause. But for me to just go out here and just stand around here and let somebody stab me to death, and then all I can say is forgive them, Lord, and know not what they do, that is idiocy. That is total idiocy. Because you go out into the wild, any animal out into the wild, whether it be an ant, you step on an ant's nest, they're going to sting the hell out of you. Because you got no business there. So why do Black people think that we need to stand around and let people come and step on us, and we're not supposed to react?
Like you said, I mean, you already gave the answer. It's been embedded in our psyche through religion, through even culture. I mean, look at all the movies that we get about Black people. It's always some Black person suffering, you know, that's being victimized. We don't never get the movies about the revolutions or the rebellions and you know, where enslaved Africans rising up and cutting heads off of their oppressor. We definitely ain't seeing nothing about the Haitian Revolution or any of the other revolutions that are lesser known. You know, we don't get no movies about African nations fighting in the late 50s and early 60s and you know, overthrowing colonialism. And no, we don't want to hear, we don't get no movies about the Mau Mau in Kenya or anything like that. No, it's all about, you know, Roots and Tobies and other victims, 12 years a slave and all of that kind of garbage. It's embedded in, it's programmed into us.
And that is something that we're going to have to unprogram some of ourselves, because there is no nobility in suffering. There is none. Because you see, we seem to stand around here, and which is why I've said it before. A lot of this comes from this false sense of us thinking that we are the parents of all these people on this planet. And because we are their parents, we are somehow responsible for them. And therefore, whatever atrocities these children of ours did or are doing to us, then we as a parent, we're supposed to accept it. This is lunacy. This is ridiculous, because we don't know where these people came from. We only know what your immediate family, what you give birth to, what you can trace within your family line, your lineage, to know exactly where we come from. All this other stuff that you're being told about here, that you know, white people are descended from Black people, and all this other nonsense you run around from. You know what? If it's not a recent event that I can look at and I can see that, okay, this white person was in the family, and therefore I know that somewhere or the other, they got related because of that, I really don't care. And even if you are, I really don't care. Which is another reason why I had to call, because I listened to your show from yesterday, and I took slight offense because you mentioned something having to do with your Native American background and your affinity for that. And, you know, and I don't have a problem with that. But what I take issue with is when a lot of us take this sort of stance to say, okay, because I might have a white relative or I might have some other relative or some other ethnicity, therefore I need to stand and defend this particular group of people because of this relative that's in that family. You know what? I really don't. I really find that is a sense of betrayal. I'm not speaking that in reference to you, Scotty. I'm just speaking in reference in general, because if you are going to go out here to defend something that you had no control of, you didn't have no say so in who was in your family tree or in your bloodline. You have no input in what happened to that, unless if that person happens to be your immediate spouse. Then you have a say in that. But you have nothing in what happened 100 years ago, whoever might have gotten raped and gotten sent into your family. You have nothing to do with that. I am not going to defend that. Which is one reason that I have said a lot of people have asked me about taking DNA tests. You know what? I'm not going to do it because I don't want to know what's in my family tree. Because even if I find out that there is some European mixture in my family tree, it's not going to change the way I said I'm going to feel. I'm going to get upset about it. But I really and truly don't want to know. And then to begin with, I don't feel it's up to me that I need to pay Europeans who benefited from my ancestors coming over here and working. No, I have to pay them to go and do a DNA study on me to try and tell me where the African continent I came from. That is an insult.
I'm still trying to grasp the part that I said that you found offensive, because I didn't defend any injustice against black people or anybody.
No, because you made some kind of reference about your Native American ancestors and how maybe I'm getting a little bit convoluted, but you made reference that you had some Native American relatives and how that you were not somewhat 100%, you know, that it had to do something with the Brown-Black Coalition with the march that went on, and how we were trying, people were trying to say, okay, it became a bit integrated because it's not a black movement. It became all these Latinos and Native Americans and whoever became involved. And a lot of people took issue, which I was one of those that took issue, because to me, if there's something black, I'm identifiably black. I don't know what might be in my gene pool. Whatever's in there, you know, to me, when people look at me on the outside, all they're going to see is an identifiable black person. They're not going to see that, okay, well, maybe she might got some Chinese or some European or whatever somewhere in our family tree. They're going to look at me as straight up for the black person.
Okay.
And to me, if I'm an identifiably black person, there's a gathering, and it's supposed to be under the umbrella of it being a black movement, I don't see why we got to come in here and say people of color and people of this and people of that. There's nothing wrong in us saying, okay, this is something for black people. Jews don't have a problem in saying this is a Jewish gathering.
Okay, now let me respond. Let me get a context. First of all, I didn't go to the march, and I said ahead of time I wasn't going to the march. Because I was not interested in going on a weekend and having a Saturday picnic on the lawn on whatever lawn that it was held on, that I could watch this online. That I thought that if you was going to have an anniversary, why not localize it and have black people meeting up on the same day all across this nation, and then allow it to be catered by black businesses. All right. But in terms of the Native Americans, I said some people had an issue with that. I said I did not have an issue with that, because like I played a clip, and I agree with Neely Fuller, that your color don't mean nothing in terms of racism and white supremacy. What matters to me is whether or not you want to practice justice. If you're against racism and white supremacy and you're working against racism and white supremacy, then I ain't got a problem with that. I ain't got a problem with forming an alliance with you, because we know that every black person ain't out here actively fighting against racism and white supremacy. Some of them are even on the enemy side and practicing racism and white supremacy against us as proxy racist tools. So that was me saying, agreeing with Neely Fuller Jr. in the clip I just played, that your color don't mean nothing. Waving the flag, being Afrocentric, none of that don't mean nothing if you ain't practicing justice. If you don't believe in practicing justice, which, you know, white supremacy is the antithesis to justice, then, I mean, what are you doing? Just because you got black skin don't mean that you my kin. You know what I'm saying? And so, like I had mentioned to Ralph yesterday, I said, Ralph, don't misunderstand me. I ain't say that I'm looking for 100% unity with Hispanics or other victims of racism and white supremacy. I said, but I will work with anyone, just like Malcolm X said he would, as long as they're fighting against racism and white supremacy. I said, from what I have learned from some of my elders, that have been engaged in black liberation is that only 5% of any population is ever going to be engaged in revolution against the system to begin with. So that means then if I got 5% of black people along with another 5% of indigenous Native Americans or 5% Hispanics, it doesn't matter. If they are willing to fight, to put their lives on the line, to fight against racism and white supremacy, then I ain't got a problem with that. That's what I'm saying. I didn't say let's start an organization, a 501c3, and it'll just be open to everybody. All right? I didn't say that. Just like Black Talk Radio Network, I didn't open it up to everybody. It's only for black people. It's only for black people who want to, so that we can elevate black voices. But I will invite non-black people on to come on and talk about their efforts against racism and white supremacy. And so that, I mean, I can't make it any simpler than what Malcolm X said in saying that, you know, he'll work with anybody that's fighting against these racists. And what Neely Fuller Jr. said, that your skin color don't mean nothing if you don't believe in practicing justice. And you know for yourself, Sarah, that a lot of us, we want to ignore that black cop that's out there helping that white cop oppress us. We want to ignore him. We want to act like that black cop is invisible and whatnot. And I'm not. And I'm going to say, I don't care what your skin color is. If you supporting white racism and white supremacy, then you are on the side of the enemy, and you can get it just like the enemy. That's the way I feel.
Well, I don't have any problem with that. I'm in 100% agreement with that. But for me, personally, I'm willing to, whoever wants, as you said, to fight white supremacy, that's fine. But you're going to have to be vetted. Because black people being at the very bottom of this totem pole when it comes to mistreatment, and everybody has stepped on us in order to get to wherever they have to get to, even these so-called people who call themselves Native Americans that are currently being identified as Native, and the Hispanics and everyone else, they've all stepped on black people, and if the opportunity comes, they're going to step on us again and run through that door to go on over there to go side with the enemy. So therefore, you know, for me, you need to be twice as cautious in vetting these people, whoever it is that you we want to side with, within which to form coalitions, them, and especially these people who identify themselves as being white. They're especially, because we have a very long history in dealing with them, to know that whatever they say that white people do, they are known betrayers, they are known liars, they are known deceivers, and they have never made a treaty or they have never made a bargain that they've ever stood on. They have broken every deal that they have ever made. They have broken it when it comes to themselves, when it comes to dealing especially with darker skinned people, black people in particular.
Yeah, I feel like everybody needs to be vetted. Again, if you black, I don't care. You got to be vetted, man. You got to be vetted, mm-hmm. Because who destroyed the black liberation movement? Who played a key role in destroying the Black Panther Party? Other black people working for the FBI, informants and agents. So everybody got to be vetted. Again, skin color don't matter to me. I'm not looking at your skin color. I'm looking at your actions. I'm looking at what you do and what you don't do. All right. And so, you know, if the Justice or Else rally was billed as a black only event, which, you know, from everything that I saw, I think it was, then yeah, it was wrong for them to bring other people into it. If this was supposed to be for the black family to come together and form some kind of unity among the black family, then, you know, you should have said that you was bringing in these other people ahead of time. But see, I don't follow Farrakhan. I don't see him as no revolutionary to begin with. Period. You know? And you know, mm-hmm. I just, again, skin color don't mean that much to me. Because at the same token, yeah, there were some indigenous tribes that practiced slavery. There were some Cherokees out of Georgia. Those Cherokee tribes wanted to be just like the white man. And they start wearing, you know, dressing like the white man, practicing Christianity like the white man, and keeping enslaved Africans like the white man. But then we see what happened to them, right? Now they somewhere off on the reservation out there in Oklahoma somewhere. And then some of them people ain't even indigenous. They white. They white. And they perpetrating a fraud. And they not indigenous. Yeah, they not indigenous. But then, and by the same token, we can say, and I have said this in the past before, we as black people, and I'm not talking about Africans in Africa or anywhere else in the diaspora, but a lot of Africans in America, especially those who want to be American, that we have participated in the colonization, in the mistreatment, and the oppression of non-white people all over this planet as our roles in the United States military. I used to be proud of the Buffalo Soldiers. When I was stationed at Fort Huachuca in Arizona, they got a big bronze statue of the Buffalo Soldier. You know, the Indians, Cochise and them, called them the Buffalo Soldier because of their woolly hair and their toughness in fighting. But do you know how those Apache got hunted down? All right, the Buffalo Soldier hunted them down. Black people hunted them down and exterminated them on behalf of white people. They are the ones who was guarding the trail out to the west so that all these white settlers could make their way to the west to displace other non-white people. Black people was guarding it. So we all done wrong to each other on all kind of levels. And so I think it's important to acknowledge that as well. And I have apologized. You know, just the other day, I was on, cause now the Hawaiian people, they gotten permission from white people, or white people giving them permission, USA Inc., acknowledging that we illegally overthrew your nation, your sovereign nation. We executed your queen, beheaded her in the palace, my ex-wife was telling me the other day. And so now they get to vote. They get to take a vote on reestablishing their nation. All right. And so, you know, I was thinking about when I was there. Okay. I was part of an occupying force. I didn't see that as no young 20-year-old soldier who was just joining the military to escape this little country town. And so that I didn't have to go into debt to get money for college and whatnot and to get some of those benefits. But, you know, why I was in the military is when I came into consciousness. And then I viewed myself as an occupier, as a tool of their oppression and whatnot. Now, you know, Schofield Barracks is where I was stationed at, and it came up on Facebook for whatever reason. And I left a review on Schofield Barracks, and I apologize to those people, to whoever read it, as my role as an enemy soldier in occupying that island. All right. So again, you know,
okay, Scotty, you break it up, Scotty.
Okay, I'm all right. Let me calm down a little bit. I get passionate. I ain't upset or nothing. I just get passionate. But I do think that we have to acknowledge our role. How did Puerto Rico became a colony? All right. Teddy Roosevelt and the Rough Riders, those were black soldiers, man. Those were black soldiers going over there fighting and oppressing other black people. You know, when we think of Puerto Ricans, we think of the light skin with the wavy hair type. But a lot of them Puerto Ricans, if you actually go to the island, are African descendant people with woolly hair, look just like us. And we did that.
The Cubans are majority Afro-Cuban.
Right, right. So that's all I'm saying. If we're going to bring up that other people participated in the oppression of black people, we have to also look at that. Hell, we have participated in their oppression as well.
I agree with you, but you know, in the sense that what you were stating with the Buffalo Soldiers and the Rough Riders, Teddy Roosevelt and what those black soldiers did, and being an oppressed person, I'm not making any excuses for any of these actions, because what these Native Americans have done, if you were to go back in with our enslavement, when they sided with the Europeans in our enslavement, so if during this period with the Buffalo Soldiers, some blacks were recruited are sent out there misguidedly, which some of them, in fact, end up having becoming desert, running AWOL and end up, you know, marrying into the different various tribes and becoming tribal members after seeing their, after regretting what they have done. But not enough of them have done that. So it went, so the atrocities went both ways. We did some of it to them, and they also did some of it to us. They don't wash it, they don't make it clean, because atrocities are atrocities. Your pain is no more greater than mine if we're all bleeding out.
Right, right, right. And in terms of coalitions, I mentioned, I didn't mention this on the program yesterday, but, you know, and again, we have to also acknowledge that Native Indians do not all belong to one nation. All right. They ain't all together on nothing. They have different tribes. They have different tribes, and some tribes did this and some tribes did that. Some wanted to be just like the white men. Some tried to murder the white, I mean, not murder the white man, but to kill him because of what he was doing. You know, the area that I live in, my descendants, the indigenous Cherokees of North Carolina that I am a descendant of, when the Europeans first pushed into this area of North Carolina, they got slaughtered. They got slaughtered and got wiped out. It was only in Jamestown, Virginia, that the Europeans were able to establish a beachhead. And those Native Americans up there helped them. But the ones down here in North Carolina did not. They killed them when them Spanish first pushed into North Carolina in the region that I'm in now, in western North Carolina. I also talked about yesterday, not on the radio show, but we were just talking about alliances between non-white people. I'm sure you have heard of the Black Seminoles, right? Escaped enslaved Africans, usually mostly out of Georgia and South Carolina, made their way to Florida, where they hooked up with the Seminole Indians. And they had such a power, they built such a powerful army that they defeated the United States Army. And they battled them to a standstill, but they eventually had to leave. They came with a treaty. They had a treaty, but they knew them white people weren't going to honor that treaty. And so they made their way and settled in northern Mexico. That was a Native Indian Black alliance that was successful. So that's all I'm saying. Like I've said before, I ain't even trying to look unified with all black people, because all black people ain't trying to overthrow racism and white supremacy. They just trying to get comfortable up in it. All right. And so I mean, what Malcolm said and what Neely Fuller said, if you about practicing justice, if you about overthrowing the system of racism and white supremacy, I can get down with you. But I agree with you. We got to vet people or who we going to work with. But that include, I'll go a step further. We got to vet everybody, Sarah, because the enemy is good at manipulating or giving bribes to other black people so that they can work on the inside, infiltrate our movements, and destroy us from within. That's what happened to the Black Panther Party.
And I do agree with you, because they have known us, because we are the only group of people that have been under white domination or white control for such an extended, long, and protracted period. So they have pretty much manipulated us and know all of our nuances and know what buttons to push within which to get us to act against our best interest. And I do agree with that, because I know for a fact that not everybody black that share your same skin tone as your skin folks. And you've got to vet those people. But especially people that you know are your enemies, that have done things to you, and they have a history behind them to show what they have done. You know, definitely, you know, you're going to vet a black person two and three times. Those type of people, you've got to vet them at least 100 times and test them to see exactly if they are indeed what they say that they represent. Because their history tells us that you cannot trust them, not even as far as your eyes can see them, because your eyes sometimes can play tricks on you when it comes to dealing with them. Because some of us see what we want to see and not what's actually in front of us when it comes to dealing with white people.
And I see the other caller. I'm gonna come to you. We got about 6 minutes. Brother Dave should be calling in soon. He hasn't called in yet to do his program Tando Radio Show. So caller, hang on. I'm gonna come to you. But I'm gonna say this, Sarah. I got males in my family. I don't mess with. I don't deal with.
I know, brother. I got sisters in my family that I have not spoken to. Like I was telling Rob, I have a sister that I haven't spoken to. My mother's funeral was in 2006. I have a sister that I haven't spoken to since then. I have a brother also I haven't spoken to since then. So I know within family, that's why for me, it, before I complete form coalition with people, those type of relationships, even though it ended on a very sour note, we're going to have to come to some kind of agreement because we're all from the same mother and father. Even if we could make amends but go our separate ways, then that's what we're going to have to do. We just know that there's just some things that, you know, you just can't come together with them. They're blood relatives. But you at such a point in your life, no, that's where I'm at right now. I'm at such a point in my life that I really don't miss them. I don't miss that. I do not miss that connection. It's just something that is just, it's what it is.
Yeah. I'm saying, though, that they have committed such an egregious, unforgivable offense that when I see them, don't call me cuz. Don't be asking for no dap or nothing like that. You know what you did, so get the fuck away from me. I'm serious.
I agree, Scotty, because that's the same thing I told those two, my brother and my sister. I said, as far as I'm concerned, we are just dead on this part of the divide. I said, you know, whatever happened to you, it happened. You know, we just going about your life, and I don't have nothing else to say to y'all. That's it. I said, that's fine.
I do get down with my other family members. I just can't work with them because the offense that they committed was so egregious. And then, too, if you won't even ask for forgiveness and apologize for what you did, well, I ain't one to forgive you in faith. You know what I'm saying? I'm not going to forgive you and all this and that. No, no. In order to me, if you want forgiveness, you got to ask for it first.
Exactly, Scotty, and that's the same thing that I would say with this forgiveness thing, because if I have two relatives, blood relatives of mine, that I have not forgiven and I have not forgotten, I'm not going to go out on care and go and tell them, you know, yay, I forgive you, because that's just phoniness. That's just phoniness that you are doing, because you don't mean it. You're just saying it just for the heck of saying it.
Yeah, because it might sound good, or people been programmed through religion to say something like that. Nah, not me, because if you did it once and you don't show no remorse, you'll do it again. So it's best you stay far away from me. Let me pick up
this. Thank you, Scotty. I'll mute myself. I'll let you pick up the other caller.
All right. Thanks. Good to hear from you, Sarah.
You too, Scotty.
Area code 650. Thanks for calling in. Go ahead with your question or comment.
How you doing, Scotty? Hey, I feel a sister, and I feel you too on the with our situation, you know what I mean? Like when the Indians got their compensation for the all these casinos out here in California or whatnot, they didn't bring up no black issues. They brought up their issues. Same thing with the Mexicans. They bringing up their issues. They ain't bringing up our issues. Right or wrong?
Yeah, you're right. But because
you
I do...
me?
Yeah, I feel you. Let me say this. Because I do have a relationship through Political Prisoner Radio with indigenous people that's involved in the American Indian movement. They ain't even 100% down with each other. I did an interview with this Indian brother who said that they were sold out by some members of their own tribe who want to put a casino on top of their sacred burial ground. So you got Indians selling out other Indians. It ain't, you know, they ain't even got 100% unity within their community.
Right. Yeah. I just feel, you know, if they want to do something with us, go start their own move.
Well, again, because I'm in the political prisoner movement and advocating for the release of our political prisoners, and that does not get a whole lot of mainstream attention, but we do. We do work with each other. We do promote each other's political prisoners and demanding their release. But we are all very small minorities of where we come from. How many black people do you know that are out there advocating for the release of Mumia Abu-Jamal? Is every black person out there saying, let that brother go free?
They don't even know the conditions he in.
Exactly. And so, again, is goes to what some of the elders told me, Scotty. Only 5% of the people are willing to engage in revolution. The majority of the people are not.
Right. Yeah, but, you know, Scotty, I done been to prison with them and stuff, bruh. They don't mess with us in prison, bruh. None of them, bruh. It's everybody, every race, you know, with their race. You know what I mean? It's crazy, man.
And we got to break through that. See, that's what I'm saying, though. A lot of that is because of we're all victims of racism and white supremacy, and they are very good at their job, and they rather have non-white people beefing with each other instead of turning on the white supremacists. That's the way I see it. We're all victims, we're all confused, and we all got a lot to learn in terms. And so I look at it from a military standpoint. I'm like, okay, you say you against racism and white supremacy, correct? All right. What I need y'all American Indians to do, I need y'all to open up this front, this war front over there in the area that y'all in against the white supremacists, and we'll hold it down on this side. So it's not necessarily saying that we all got to come together. No, I'm saying that we coordinate our individual efforts just like what happens in a war, where you have different allies, and then those allies have different roles that they play. That's all I'm saying, is coordinate efforts on the battlefield. I ain't saying we all got to be in the same unit or the same troop or the same this or that, but there do needs to be a line of communication. And then we can ask those, we can ask them that conversation, you know, well, why is your people over here, your Hispanic people out there in LA, them LA gangs out there murdering black people and trying to push them out their neighborhood? So don't talk to me about Donald Trump being racist towards your people, and you ain't addressing your people being racist towards mine. You see what I'm saying? But we got to have that line of communication open in order to intimate that. So I'm not no fool, man. I'm not foolish. We have many enemies, and they come in all shades and whatnot. But we also have many allies out there, and we need to develop those relationships. That's all I'm saying.
Right.
But I do agree with Sister Sarah when, if you're saying that we're having an event for black people so that we can work on ourselves and we could come together and whatnot, then you shouldn't invite nobody from the outside into that. If this is supposed to be for black people, don't invite other people out, and then we get there and we find out, well, who the hell is all these other people? You know what I'm saying? Right. So that's on Farrakhan. That's on Farrakhan, man. That's on him.
Another thing, we got a petition going on change.org, man, in Oakland, California. The feds are picking up gun cases illegally, man. We're trying to stop it, man. And they sending brothers off to the feds for long times, man. If you got prison priors, you too, man. You get caught with a gun in Oakland, California, man. Feds picking it up. They're trying to get rid of it. It's illegal. Washington, D.C. not messing with it.
Can you send me some information on that?
I can pull up what I know. My cousin has all the information. He's incarcerated right now.
Okay. Well, any information that you can gather on that, if you can, I don't know if you are connected to me on Facebook, if we connected with each other.
I'll mess with Facebook.
Okay. Well, my email address.
I mess with the Instagram.
Yeah, hit me up with an email, admin, as in administrator, admin at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
Admin at blacktalkradio, okay.
Yeah, if you could hit me up with that, that'd be cool, man. And I'll look into it and get the information and the petition disseminated out.
He's fighting it right now. He did all his homework on it, you know what I mean?
Okay.
And he's fighting it, and he's on his way to trial. And you know the percentage rate on that. You know what I mean? He ain't got a lawyer or nothing. You know, he just going. He trying to do pro per, but they wouldn't let him do that. So we end up getting one of their phony lawyers, man.
Okay. All right. Well, bro, I got to move on. Tando about to come on air. Brother Dave, I see he's checked in. So we're going
to
transition.
I'll send that to you, though, Scotty.
All right. Send that to me, man. Appreciate you.
Okay.
Peace. All right, folks, I'm going to bring my program to an end as we make way for Brother Dave and Tando Radio Show, where they will be talking about the table.
Q&A queue is cleared.
Preparedness, the most important part, which is food. All right, I really appreciate the information that they bring in trying to help our people prepare for these man-made disasters and even natural disasters. And they'll be focusing on, even if you on a budget, you ain't got a lot of money, you still can prepare. So with that said, recognize the fact that we live behind enemy lines, that it's a battlefield out there, that casualties are being created every day. And so that you can decrease the likelihood that you will become a casualty, then you need to develop codification. You need to develop strategies. You need to develop habits. You need to develop battlefield awareness so that you do not become such an easy victim. We can't guarantee that you won't become a victim, but at least, you know, we can decrease the likelihood that we become victims. All right. So with that said, peace and blessings to all. Please stay tuned. Tando Radio Show is coming right up.